Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
G'day and welcome to Draft Doctors, your home of fantasy footy draft. This week we are looking at our late round draft picks that could help you get over the top. It's our sleepers. I'm Doss, and joining in as always, it's Stevie Fizz. G'day, mate.
Oh, g'day, Dossie. G'day, boys, and g'day, listeners. I hate sleepers. It's one of my most... It's terrible, terrible subject. I'm not a big fan at all.
It's all or nothing, Stevie. And Jono, you're here as well. How do you feel about sleepers?
Yeah, well, considering I picked Rowan Marshall last year and didn't even pick him at all, I'm pretty happy about him. So let's see what I got this week and completely forget about him when we come to our drafts.
Yes, looking forward to your picks. You did nail a couple last year. And Cam, someone who didn't nail anything last year, he's here as well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. I'm looking to back that up this year. I've got a couple of rippers that will probably just leave me in more you suck material for next year.
Beautiful. Well, let's get in straight into our sleepers. We've got two each. Steve, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, and so just go, just say quickly why I hate sleepers. And it feels like you're either going to be taking... for me, there's two categories. And one is you're taking someone who will push themselves into relevant status, which doesn't require a huge leap generally, or you're taking someone who, if they have things work out the right way, like say a Rowan Marshall last year, maybe say like a big O, Oscar McInerney, if Steph Martin went down, they could vault to be a top 10 option at their position. So, but they need things to work out, so... That's probably why I don't like it, because the guys who just push in are the safer guys, but the other guys are the league winners. So I'm going to start it off with Majak Dawe. And I think he's just completely under the radar. So much of the focus is going to be on the players who missed 2019, like Titch and Alex Rance and Sam Doherty, these sort of types. But Majak Dawe was actually... He was coming on strong at the end of 2018, and he was being talked about in his elite intercept defender, and I think that's really where I want to start. He averaged the 78 Supercoach across the year in 2018, and I know, sorry to all the listeners out there who aren't Supercoaches, but we do have to cater to some of them out there. So he'd be around D50 by that average. So the biggest thing for North Melbourne is Scott Thompson has left. He was ranked 12th in the AFL for intercept marks per game. Old man Scotty was getting it done. He had a pretty good year. And look, it doesn't take a huge leap for Majak to assume the numbers he was putting out in 2018. And I really want to highlight these last five games where he was just on fire. He played forward in a couple of matches before this spell, and he had a couple of big games, Supercoach tons. Last five, he had 4, 5, 5, 8, and 1 intercept mark, averaged 93.4 Supercoach. That's really, really relevant. That's borderline top 10. So he took the 52 intercept marks in 18 games, did play the two as a forward I mentioned. That 3.25, which would be his average if it was in 16 games, that'd be the second best in the league this year, and only one of two players to take over three intercept marks per game. If for whatever reason... we don't need a massive leap for Majak Dawe. If he comes back, if he averages mid-teen disposals, 7 marks, a couple of tackles, that's really nice. The other thing about Majak Dawe is he'll pinch hit in the ruck and get you 6 hit-outs in a game. And that's just free points. It's super. And if for whatever reason Goldstein happens to shit the bed or get injured or whatever, their only backups are Tom Campbell and younger guys. So Majak could find himself in even more of a split role in the ruck. And that could be good times as well. So I think he's just completely forgotten about in drafts. We know he came back at the end of last year, played a couple games in the VFL. He's in preseason training, looks fine from all reports, as I'm sure everyone does, except for Ben McKay, who apparently is just getting destroyed in time trials. So another leg up for Majak Dawe.
Hey, you mentioned last week, Stevie, and I think you just outlined it there as well, why that you're not so keen on people returning from injuries, and obviously this is a sleeper, so it is more of a punt than someone like your Tom Mitchell, as we mentioned last year. But it was a pretty significant injury, and I think you outlined it there. The reason why is because he played a bit last year at the tail end and obviously doing the preseason now. Is that why you're not as scared to take a chance on Majak Dore as well?
Yeah, I think the fact that he's played VFL at the end of last year gives me a bit more confidence in picking him. There was a couple other guys I was looking at who maybe aren't hitting the ground running, let's say. I had a real tough time with these picks. I really didn't like them at all. But Majak Dore, I see him as someone who, if everything broke right, could be, in your Supercoach leagues, a borderline D, you know, high-end D3, low-end D2, if things broke well for him.
Mm. You mentioned at the start as well, Alex Rantz coming back from that injury. I just wanted to touch on him because I was looking at it and I thought maybe I was like, gee, you didn't put him as a sleeper. But do you think because he's too risky coming back off an ACL and age 30 and B, maybe because of his successes in the past, he's not really considered a sleeper in your Supercoach format?
Yeah, I think, and that's right, Doss. I don't think he'll, like, we outlined a bit of a criteria that these are players we thought would go after round 14. I think he goes before that. Like, just the name Alex Rantz is too much. And the same as Tom McDonald. Like, I was really tossing up whether to have him in here. He had obviously a stinker of a year, but I think it's really hard for me to say he's a sleeper when the guy's averaged, you know, 97 2 years ago, sort of thing. So, just that criteria is all.
Yep. All right, Jono, do you want to give us your first sleeper?
Yeah, my first sleeper is Carl Amon. And if you remember the 2019 season, he actually had a pretty good purple patch from about rounds 9 through 15, where he was scoring 98s and tons. Like, he scored 3 Supercoach tons and 2 AFL fantasy tons in that period. And for the year, he averaged 77 Supercoach and 76 AFL fantasy, which in the terms of things, we put him as 107th midfielder and the 100th in Supercoach and the 111th in AFL fantasy. Now, in 2019, he was listed as a forward, but since he moved to that wing position, he will probably lose that. But the thing is, he got time on the wing and showed that he can score. In his 2019, he did have an injury-affected game, but when you take that out, it just slightly bumped his average up to the 80s, low 80s there. So you can see that he has a ceiling. It's around 90 to 100. I know, Doss, you don't like 90 averaging midfielders like Jared Pollock, but that's the role he's going to be playing there at Port Adelaide. He's 24 years old, going on 25. He's right in the peak of his career, entering his sixth year. So there's a lot of upside to his game. He's averaging 20 possessions, 3.5 marks, 3 tackles a game. If you can add maybe a goal or a few more possessions, then there is that opportunity for him to get a 90, maybe a 93 average, which makes him usable as an M7, M6. And also his time on ground, it went up from like 69 to 70%, up to 77% in 2019. So he is getting more opportunity on the ground. So there is massive upside for him. And when you think Carl Amon, you're like, whew, you don't want any bar of that. But he is someone who could pop for you late in your drafts coming into 2020.
Yeah, actually, I do like it. I think it could be highly relevant going into next year. The only concern I'd have is the departure of Sam Gray, and maybe he'll potentially be pinch hitting in that forward structure, but just a little unsure. But I do like, you know, if it does break well for him and he gets that wing time, yeah, 90 wing is pretty bang on.
But he was playing that wing time with Sam Gray on that side, so I can't see anyone taking that spot off him.
Oh, it's more that Sam's gone now, right? And I can't think of anyone else. Yeah, so Sam Gray got delisted.
Okay, I missed that one.
And I'm just not sure who's going to fill that yet. And I think Carl Amon's a pretty good shout.
Speaking of opportunity as well, Stevie got me writing an article and I've sort of got some data on Port. And, you know, we're talking about opportunity and the fantasy points leaving the team. Port's one of the highest with people getting out that did play some footy last year and had put some fantasy scores up. Obviously, it doesn't account for the roles that we're talking about for Carl Amon, but a crap load of fantasy points went out of Port last year and they didn't replenish them with people. I think they basically only brought in Wiley Buzzer. So unless Buzzer's going to take up all those points, there are certainly some points to go around. So Carl Amon, your first sleeper there. Jono, Cam, do you want to provide us with yours?
Yeah, so my first one is James Aish. And the thing about James Aish is he induces a tiny bit of vomit when his name is mentioned in fantasy footy circles. And the main reason behind the retching is that early in his career, there was a little bit of hype behind him. He was drafted at number 7, and he secured himself a Jack rating in the Dream Team Talk Deck of Dream Team 2016. But he's just never managed to hit any kind of relevancy at all in pretty much any format. That said, in an injury-interrupted year last year where he only managed 13 games, around half the games he scored over 82 AFL fantasy points, which, you know, granted that that was pretty heavily offset by a bunch of really, really shitty scores, but you could probably put them down to a mix of injury-affected games, opportunity at a stacked Pies midfield, and the fact that most of the middle-tier defenders have, you know, at least some off games through the season. I guess the reason to draft Aish is uncertainty. And if you're comfortable with that uncertainty, remembering in these sort of late positions that we're looking at for, we're just looking at for some hashtag value rather than potential breakout. The whole new club thing is a piece of uncertainty and probably where the potential upside comes from. I'm intrigued about where they're going to deploy him. And we've discussed it before, and I think the consensus was that he'd play a similar defensive wingman role that he played at the Pies. But what's interesting, I think, is more about where you'll be able to draft him. Realistically, he's probably going to go undrafted in most leagues. His average last year and that year before was unrosterable. It's not something that you'd have on your field, and you wouldn't even have him on your bench. That's why I think that given the uncertainty and the fact that, you know, if you do like taking a little bit of a punt on someone that previously had some hype, there's every chance that he pulls those 82s out every now and then. And he may average in the mid to high 70s if he's able to stay on the park. If we take into consideration last year's scoring defenders, that makes him the equivalent of a D3 in AFL fantasy. That's how, like, there was a significant drop-off in averages last year. So, I mean, you're basically going to get him for free. It's not the sexiest take, but it's a rosterable defender that you'll get him for nothing, and you can boot him to the curb if he's trash in a couple of games.
Yeah, I'm not super pumped about Aish, but I can see somebody's got to start picking up the scoring of all the guys going out of Fremantle, and the coach did bring him across for a reason, so you'd hope that he gets a nice role. Jono, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Freo's going to be an interesting one, and they're a massive watch over the JLT for me. Like, just how they've come out and said that they're going to be more attacking ball use going forward, so does that mean they use two or three guys out of defence if Aish is one of them, with Wilson and maybe Luke Ryan, who knows? So there is a bit of interest for me with James Aish, but certainly got to keep an eye over that on the preseason.
Yeah, I think Cam hit it on the head. The thing is the uncertainty for me. If he's going over to be a role player in a defensive role, they've already got a few ball users back there, so maybe he's a defensive wingman who's listed as a defender, which is nice. But the thing that sort of, like, and I like your other pick, and it's the same team, so I don't know how I can justify one and not the other. Maybe it's the history and all that. But you're going from the top marking team in the AFL to one of the worst. Like, there's a 20 mark difference between the teams, and you're going from one of the best disposal efficiency teams to one of the worst. So if you're going to build the score, especially for James Aish, he's an outside player, so he's going to want marks to build his score. To me, maybe that doesn't line up.
Yeah, and I actually think it. I'd have a guess, and, you know, back me up if you think so as well, but I think Frio's defenders are their best ball users across the park.
Yeah,
and so potentially that link across defence to the wing may be the better opportunity where he could actually get marks and build that score, but I agree. It's speculative at best.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think I'll jump on to my first player, my first sleeper here. And guys, I'm doing a full 180 on my Gelwood bounce back call from a few weeks ago now. I was never fully aboard it, but I'm jumping ship on what could have possibly been one of my only good calls for the preseason. I'm going in a completely different direction and might be joining Steve in the Gelwood's a Jag campaign that he's apparently on the preseason.
I've never said he's a Jag. I've said he's a super fraud.
Didn't you say he's a list clogger? Or was that me in my drunken ramblings in private chat?
That was you.
Full, a lot of Joe would hate on this pod. I'm not about that, but I am going in a different direction. So the Cats got Jack Stephen, who is adept in the mids and up forward. He'll be as close to the Tim Kelly replacement as they can get, really. But the Cats never solidified that other midfield spot in 2019. They preferred Mitch Duncan on the outside, and they opted for players like Cam Guthrie, spent a fair bit of time in there. They had a bit of Brandon Parfitt, some Narkle when he was fit at the end of the year, a bit of Menegola when he was fit at the end of the year as well. But one forgotten player who I think is the man to answer the Cats' woes is third-year breakout player Charlie Constable. He played 7 of the Cats' first 9 games in 2019 before getting in the Chris Scott doghouse somehow and not returning again to the senior team. At AFL level, he averaged 21 disposals, 4 marks, 4 tackles, a great score build there for 83 fantasy points in just 68% time on ground as well. So could tank be the issue? It's a pretty good question. He went down to the twos, averaged 27 disposals, 4 marks and 5 tackles. And that includes a bizarre game where he had 3 touches and presumably got injured. So he averaged 95 AFL fantasy points across 12 games in there. Impressive numbers. Role is the big question. So what Charlie has got going for him, though, is something that has proved to be a successful formula to being an absolute top-end mid in the AFL in recent years, and that's size. He's 191 centimetres tall, so the combo of size and ball magnetism and tackling in limited time on ground was something we also saw from another man early in his career who stood at precisely 191 centimetres, Jack McRae. 2 tons in 9 games, while showing flashes in limited time on ground, and the outgoing weapon of Tim Kelly, that's pretty much right picking for that sleeper spot, I think. Obviously, there's some competition there, but what do you guys think on Charlie Constable as a potential sleeper in 2020?
Yeah, look, it really depends with the Cats, right? So there's one thing that works in his favour, or 2 things, you're right, Tim Kelly leaving. Mitch Duncan has come out and actually said that he had a pretty severe medial ligament injury, and so he's going to miss a lot of the preseason, potentially not start the season. So there's potentially 2 opportunities from there. But then you have Jack Stephen coming in, and the other thing is, where is Constable the right guy that they need in that midfield or not? I agree he can build a score, but I'm concerned that maybe they're going to go in a different direction.
Yeah, I find it really hard to get around this one. Like, you're talking about someone who might not be best 22, and he needs so many things to go right for him to be relevant for fantasy. Like, he might be a great keeper pickup at the moment, Doss, and be good in a couple of years, much like the guy I'm probably going to talk about next as well. But I find it hard for him to be hard to see him being relevant this year.
Yeah, you've also got, like, Sam Menegola, right? He basically played a bit part last year. You know, he is an inside mid by trade. I think there's every chance that he goes back in there, given a full preseason as well. So they say the spot is up for grabs, but I'd say it's probably Mitch Duncan or as I've said before.
Well, with Menegola, he played back in he played defense in one of the finals and played pretty well, I would have said. So I understand there's probably a few guys that are going through there, but my big thing that has changed and has allowed me to put Constable here is I'm cooling on my Gelwood back into the guts call. I don't think they would have done it for like a whole year without reasoning behind it. And my feeling is that it's going to be another, like, I think the only thing that I'm thinking of is load management stuff. I think they want him ready for finals, and if they need to put him in the inside in finals, they're going to do that. They've got these young guys that they want to bring through, and for me, I think a guy that's 191 centimetres and can rack up the pill, you've just got to get his tank and a bit of defensive work rate or something on board. I think that's the modern midfielder, and I think they'll try and develop it.
One player who isn't getting spoken about for the Geelong midfield is Cam Guthrie. He played a hell of a lot through there, as we saw, Dossie.
It's fair. And if they do back him in again, then that's one to watch. Do you want to take us through your next one, Steve?
Yeah, so again, I'm going to harp on teams who have had areas with fantasy points and statistics going, and I'm not huge on picking forwards, but there has been, I would say that the biggest area of any team that's had losses is the Adelaide forward line. Like, I'll run through these numbers. They've lost 75 goals. They've lost their top two forward 50 ground ball gets players. They've lost their leading tackler by average. They've lost 4.5 tackles inside 50. They've lost their second by average contested mark player. They've lost their 7th, 12th, and 14th AFL fantasy averaging players. And these are all guys who you could assume Darcy Fogarty's role could play their role. Like, this is a guy who's a first-round talent. He's coming into his third year. I understand everyone's looking at the Fremantle wings as the spot, but there is just nowhere that has lost the talent and the opportunity in the Adelaide forward line. First-round pick, entering his third year. He ran an okay time trial the other day, which has probably been his question mark. He was likened to a Dangerfield type who coming into the system was going to take a few years, and maybe this isn't his year. Maybe it's next year or the year after. But I really see him being Adelaide's version of Jordan Degoe. He kicked 5 goals against West Coast in not huge time on ground, kicked 3 against Collingwood. There's 2 of the best defences going around. He'll be listed as a defender and a forward. He played defence in the Sandfall. Then when the forwards weren't working out, they threw him back because he was drafted to be a forward. So they threw him back there. He'll probably get that defender-forward split. There's just too much opportunity for him not to do well. The thing is that he's going to need good goals to boost his score. We saw him kick the 5 goals, didn't even register 90. So that's the sort of thing Jordan Degoe was doing, like not a mass accumulator of the ball. But with all the tackles going from Adelaide as well, if he can build his tank somewhat to where he can roam out of the forward 50 a little bit and lay some wood on some players, I think there's a world where he can be relevant. Although I will say Adelaide's first few games are pretty bad from a matchup perspective, so you might be looking to grab him in around like playing from around 4 or 5 onwards. But I'd certainly keep my eye on Darcy Fogarty and have to grab him in keepers.
Not only did they lose the likes of Betts, Greenwood, the guys you talk, Jenkins, the players you're talking about that were those keys to the forward line last year. Not a great successful forward line, but a forward line nonetheless. You've also lost Tex Walker to the wing, Steve. So another spot that Fogarty going to be ripping it up there.
I'm not, you know, I punch up, Doss. I'm not going for Tex.
All right. Well, anyone else got any thoughts
and the
on
time
Darcy
and look, his time on ground is under 80% a game. Like, that's nothing for a key forward. So he's got time coming his way as well.
Very strange year last year with them not giving him more of a game after having, I mean, not a terrible, was that his rookie year the year before? Like, not, it wasn't too bad that last year.
Yeah. So that was his second year and it was strange, man. Strange, you know, first round pick, local guy. They were keen to get him in the draft by all reports and, you know, for whatever reason, they played him in defence. Or maybe they wanted to build his defensive side of the game, or maybe these are part of the reasons why the Adelaide hierarchy is different this year.
And Adelaide, number one on the opportunity power rankings for points going out versus coming in.
No surprises there, Dossie.
Yes. All righty. Jono, take away your second sleeper.
Yeah, so it's another Crows player, but this time it's at the defensive end of the ground. And I'm only picking this guy because we've probably forgotten about him after his stellar 2018. And come round one in 2019, he tore his ACL. And that's Tom Dode. This is a guy who averaged 82 Supercoach and 72 AFL Fantasy. And yes, he is going to be more Supercoach relevant than AFL Fantasy. So we're just going to stick to that side for a little bit longer. He was the main man back in 2018, intercepting everything left, right, and centre. And as we know in Supercoach scoring, intercept marks and possessions are worth gold in terms of scoring. So coming back from the ACL, yeah, sure, it's a little bit worrying, but he's up and running. He's doing the full preseason, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be articles in that other horrible salary cap format talking him up as a bargain basement price, but we don't care about that. Alex Keith has been traded to the Western Bulldogs, so he's got no competition as that defensive interceptor. They rate him highly down there at the Crows, back in 2018, he was averaging 18 possessions, 5.5 marks, and 3 tackles a game. So not too bad for your first year. He was a little bit handball happy, but if they can get him to being that kick, more of a kicker-style defender than a handballer, then we could see a slight rise in terms of average, but still an 82 average in terms of super coach is not too bad. That's your D4 range, and bump it up to maybe an 85, 86. You're looking around D3, and AFL Fantasy, that can go up to a 77, 78. So I'm pretty keen on Tom Dodo next year, especially when his average was a paltry 50 and I think 32 in AFL Fantasy once he did his ACL. So he's certainly going to slide in your drafts.
Yeah, it's a nice pick, Jono. Rated elite for intercept possessions, disposal efficiency, spoils, 1%ers on the AFL Stats Pro. And he's still young as well, what, 22 years old or something as well?
Well, he came second in the Rising Star a couple of years ago. So, yeah, still very young.
Yeah. Alex Keith Gorn is going to be the intercept king down there. So, nice pick for your Supercoach formats. Cam, do you want to take us through your last sleeper?
Yeah. So, Steve thought that I was going to be doing Stephen Hill, but I did change that at the last second today for someone, you know, after Steve got a little bit worked up last week with me putting Tom Mitchell at number 3 in his return from a broken leg. I couldn't resist the opportunity to pick another person coming back from a broken leg, the much maligned Jack Watts. Now, many might...
Boo this man! Steve Hill was such a better pick.
So many might have already forgotten that the 2019 season saw Jack Watts shift to half-back playing an intercept defender role before his leg shattered like the Tesla Cybertruck's windows in round 2. For those that have forgotten, in this new role, he pumped out a 92 AFL Fantasy and 90 Supercoach in his first game, and then in the second game before he was injured, he was scoring at exactly a point per percent time on ground. While it's a tiny data set, I think it's justified that there's a little bit of, you take a little bit of a deeper look and can, you know, interest into his preseason, because it shows that he can be really successful as a scorer in that position. Looking forward to 2020, it's a preseason watch for sure. He's coming back from that broken leg and is on a modified training program at the moment, though there are good signs coming out from the early footage with him running back-to-back 200 sprints and looking pretty comfortable doing it. There's also a question about where he'll be deployed once fit, but I look at Port's forward line and I think it actually worked quite well last year. So they were ranked 9th for scoring as far as goals and points goes. So it's not terrible. And the cohesion was probably there as well. In regards to Dixon, when he came back, he was okay. Westhoff was okay. Rosie and Dersmer and Butters all chipped in. Robbie Gray was doing what he does. And then I think this year you'll probably see some Lysette and Laddams in that mix as well, not to mention Wiley Buzzer. So I'm sure he'll be... I'm thinking that there's probably not a spot for him in the forward line. And the gut feel for me at the moment is that he'll probably be deployed in defense again. Keep an eye on any news about where he's training, if he's training with the forward group or with the defense. If it is with the forward group, I'd be pretty hesitant to pick him up. But as a defender, I think he showed scoring potential and definitely one to watch. If he can average over 80, you know, again, as a late throwaway pick, that's a bit of a bargain.
I'm having flashbacks to last year, Cam, and I reckon I recall one of your sleepers from last year, which almost would have been, in my opinion, a better pick for this year, is a guy coming back. You chose another one coming back off an injury last year, a Port Adelaide teammate, Hamish Hartlett, who actually has an average under what Jack Watts averaged last year at 76.4 versus the 79 that Watts averaged. I mean, this is the second year coming back off an ACL for Hartlett. I would have thought that would have been potentially even a safer pick than your Jack Watts coming off the shattered leg, as you say, Cam.
Yeah, the bit that worried me is the age. So I think he's heading into 32.
No, he's at 1990.
Okay, so he's almost heading into 31, I believe. 30. Quick math. So I'm a little bit worried about, I guess, whether or not he'll be able to consistently put up the numbers, or if that one career year that we actually saw from Hamish Hartlett before getting injured is probably the best that he's ever going to get.
Yeah, I think they're both pretty crap picks anyway.
But it all could come down. But it all could come down to if they're playing for the same position is disposal efficiency. Whereas Hamish Hartlett is the butcher of Port Adelaide, where Jack Watt can actually use the ball pretty well.
Well, Jack Watt, yeah, he was rated elite across all key defender attributes.
Yeah, so they might be looking for someone who can use the ball out of defence as opposed to the butcher.
So let's just move on before Steve can say anything. We'll go to Doss. We'll go to Doss.
No. I've got a good and a bad. Just wanted to. You said Port Adelaide were ninth for goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were first for inside 50. So is that a good thing or a bad thing that they didn't convert those opportunities?
Selective stats here, Steve.
No, look, I actually think it makes sense. You forgot one key part, and that is the Dougal is out. Okay, so there is actually opportunity in the back line. Maybe you would consider it undersized slightly. I don't know. I don't mind the pick. He was showing good traits. I had him across the board last year. I like the opportunity. I think when you become a bit of a... Look, I know the injury's bad, so... That is the worry, but like you said, he's going to be free in draft, so I'm pretty happy with most of the picks so far, to be honest.
I have no
idea.
I'd like to
see him get through a preseason game.
Yeah, and sort of compounding that broken leg, he actually dislocated his ankle at the same time, so it's slightly worse than fucking expected. But I think if you look at the footage of him in preseason, he seriously looks like he's going okay, and that's good enough for me, I think.
And when you if you're considering taking Dan Houston out of there, if you're projecting him as a midfielder for Port Adelaide, again, that's a good ball user or a good player out of defence. So that's something Jack Watts can do. So I think I'm with you on the pick. I just I liked it last year a lot better.
Yeah.
Steve Hill though.
Port's a weird one for me because it seems like the direction from above is win now and the almost like they're playing a combo of youth and a couple of veterans. It does like they're not heavy in either sort of the direction is very strange to know where the hell they're going to go next year.
The old Michael Voss rebuild.
Yeah. I reckon they're rebuilding, but they're doing it in a way where the youngsters are getting experience from good, like everything's not on their shoulders. The end result's a middling team, but I don't know. I'd be kind of happy as far as a Port fan going. I know it's frustrating now, but I'd like the direction going forward.
I like it as well. I just wonder whether the directions from up above, you're not a big fan of the Kosh, Steve, as well. So I just wonder whether that direction to win now and the pressure is like going to influence whether we see that mix or whether it becomes a little more veteran heavy. Because we saw a lot of veterans stuck in the sample last year from that direction that seemed more like, oh, okay, allow the youth to shine. Whether that changes under the pressure, I'm interested. My final sleeper pick, Marlon Pickett, the one game wonder, the former prisoner, now pirouette genius. One game, one flag.
He's got a jail background.
And he's not underrated by any means, but perhaps in draft circles he is. Could be a genuine sleeper option for 2020. 6 games for Richmond in the VFL after arriving in the mid-season draft over from the Waffle. And he had an injury right before the draft as well. But Richmond took the punt and it paid off, as we all know. Thousands of stories have been written about it already. If my maths was right, he only put up the 61 fantasy points in the VFL, but averaged 88 in his final 3 games, including 98 in the VFL grand final, which got him the call-up. But he fits exactly what Richmond do as a team. And I think his silky skills and that elite ball use make him a perfect fit in the Tigers system. And I reckon his attributes, Cam, actually translate to better scoring at the higher level because of the better players around him. He got the 73 AFL fantasy and the 96 Supercoach points in the AFL grand final, including that. I think he finished 3rd in the norm as well in just 66% time on ground. Easily a point over minute in both formats. He's got his first AFL preseason under his belt, including that mid-year period last year. He's got a bit of time as well. Richmond lost Brandon Ellis in the trade period as well and a few others that opened up nearly 2,500 fantasy points to fill in for next year. So you'd think opportunity will be there for him and... it could be the most important contract years in recent memory as well for him personally. He's 28 years old, and the financial incentives of having a monster year for that final 2 years could be a very intriguing contract year. But what I want to talk about as well is the fact that he is a mature ager, and a lot of people are scared that there's not development to be had when you're that old, basically, when you're ancient. Similar to me, because he's actually about 2 weeks younger than me. So Marlon Pickett and me.
So he's 46 and a half.
So not a direct comparison, but I remember discussions around Tom Stewart and how he couldn't improve a heap after being a 24-year-old rookie. He just improved that 20 points from year one to year two, and again, another 15 from year two to three. So Marlon Pickett, he's a pure mid. I think that'll scare a fair few people away from drafting him. But I'd be keen later in your draft to take a stab at him. He will have the donut next to his name, so he might go unnoticed in a fair few drafts. And without an actual average next to his name, might fall fast asleep all the way to your final pick it. Guys.
Oofed.
Jeez,
pretty good data, right there.
Things were going fine until the end. Yeah, I think you make an interesting point, Dossie. It's hard to get around as a pure mid. If he got a position status somehow, I don't know. That'd be intriguing, but I don't know. Maybe there's points there for sure. It's just so hard to see, man. You're taking such a leap.
I've heard people in fantasy circles being like, oh, Pickett won't start the year. It'll be like Jack Ross or Jack Graham or something. I find it's he will be playing. If he's fit, he'll be playing round one. He was gun in the grand final. Let's be real. Anyway, very excited about that pirouette. Sorry, guys. All right. A reminder, guys, Wednesday release during the offseason. As you already know, we've got the website back up and running. Plenty of new articles going up there. We have a number up recently. We've got one on the upcoming draft, and Steve had one on the ruck situation for next year, which is very cloudy at the moment. And we've also got one going up soon that I mentioned throughout this show of opportunity and those points going in and out of the club. That'll be up soon, maybe by the time of this is released, probably. But we've got to the next part of the show, and we're going to go through something that, Steve, do you want to take us through this? Because I think one of you guys brought this up over the week, and you wanted to go through a top five this week.
Was it Jono? Brought it up originally.
You know, another Dossie's dilemma. Who would you rather have narrating your life? Would it be the great Alan Rickman or the great Morgan Freeman? So you had to choose one of the two, and I think it was just slightly Morgan Freeman in a 3-2 count, but that's the way it came about, and that's how you do a dilemma, Doss, and give two great options, and then we have a good conversation about who we're going to pick, and then it just spilled over from there.
Well, what was unlike a Dossie's dilemma is this was fun and enjoyable.
All right, well, do we want to get through our top five first? Who wants to take it away?
I'll take it away. Honourable mention, straight off the bat, I've got Martin Tyler. If you've ever played FIFA on your Xbox or PS4, then you will know he is the golden tonsils of all things football. So, honourable mention there. But if I'm in a dark mood and I need a bit of bass in my voice, I need James Earl Jones, the voice of Darth Vader. If you're an F1 fan like I am, the great Murray Walker. He knew how to commentate the Formula Ones back in the golden days of Schumacher and Montoya and Raikkonen and Hakkinen. So I would like Murray Walker's the action man. He's the action man for me when it comes to narrating my life. Number three might be a bit controversial, but it is Morgan Freeman. He is known as the doyen of all things voice acting and as an actor himself. But number two, Alan Rickman. I love this guy, whether it's Die Hard or Harry Potter. He's just got such an interesting voice, and just can, when he's, if he's talking about suits or talking about models of things in Indonesia, it just really enthralls me. But number one, it's got to be the GOAT, David Attenborough. He can just surmise any situation of how it's going, just his tone of voice just puts you at ease, and you just settle in on the couch, have a beer and a bit of popcorn, and it's all good, David Attenborough.
That cunt just puts me to sleep.
Really?
He's terrible.
Soothing voice. The soothing
voice.
It's
like the Joel Selwood of narration. Oh.
What have you got, big boy? Big fella?
Well, the honourable mention. Well, look, the people know I like a bit of a laugh, a bit of comedy. So the honourable mention is Trent from Punchy. That'll get you through the
Thank
day.
Thank God it's an honourable mention.
Hey? So number five, I've got Sam Elliott. Jono, you'll love the Sam Elliott from the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't mind that. Number four, I've got Rowan Atkinson. I think he's pretty funny. He can make things out of anything. Number three, Kamal.
Nice.
There's my X factor. How can you not get around Kamal? Number two, I've got Albert Brooks, the voice of Scorpio, and he's actually one of my... He made some great movies. I'm a big fan of some of his movies from the 80s. And number one, Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, interesting.
Very nice.
That's good.
Ken.
Josh, you want to go? Oh, okay, I'll go. So number five, I've come in with Michael Caine because you can't get away from that lush British accent. Number four, I've got Justin Roiland.
Who?
So he is the voice of both Rick and Morty. For anyone who watches Rick and Morty.
I watched Rick and Morty, but did not know that.
Christopher Sabat at number three. He is the voice of Vegeta from the English dub of Dragon Ball Z. Ron Howard from the narrator from Arrested Development. And finally, at number one, H. John Benjamin, the voice of Archer.
Oh, that's a good one.
So your number two pick, Ron Howard. Ron Howard, is that the Ron Howard, the director guy? Or
different? Yeah, correct. He narrates Arrested Development.
Wow. I've never seen what it. A black stain on his career.
What?
Whoa.
Like I said, I like comedy, so, you know.
Man, Steve's
highest joke per minute. Highest joke per minute of any show.
Steve's going to zag every time this
And it's still not a funny show.
Well, you know how I know it's not funny? Mrs. Fizz loves it.
Stevie Zag Fizz. All right, I'm going my top five. Seeing as we are AFL fantasy or super coach as well, but, you know, AFL in the theme, Dennis Cometti at number five, the golden tonsils of the AFL, in my opinion. Number four for that comedy factor, we got Ricky Gervais. Just love that British, beautiful British. Jesus. Yes, no, don't come at Ricky Gervais. Don't do it. Number three, just for the movie factor, Ray Liotta. As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. Goodfellas. Come on.
Yeah, I'm saying Goodfellas, but Jesus Christ.
I've got the SpongeBob guy for another day in Bikini Bottom.
No one? Never seen SpongeBob because I'm older than five.
And Kenneth Branagh, the underrated gem of Walking with Dinosaurs. I just can't get over that guy's narration. So underrated. Just like Joel Selwood, Steve.
Would you say Kenneth Branagh?
I'm a Branagh man.
Branagh?
Branagh!
We need to have a Twitter poll on this. This is... I'm closer to Jono than you other two. I remember why... what happened to the Statesman buffer between their horse shit and reality?
Statesman would have been all for Ron Howard, though.
Because he was probably best friends with him in the 30s. I don't know.
All right, 2 hours later, and we better get to our questions here. And we're at The Draft Doctors on Twitter. You can follow us there. Phil asks, any movies that you consistently fall asleep to? Mine are any of the Lord of the Rings. This better not be hate on Lord of the Rings. This better be because he watches them so much. That he's
on
the couch
so fucking
and
long
suddenly
well.
Nods off. What's this?
They're like 3 hours each.
They're pretty bad. Fucking hell, Steve.
I can't even say that because I got like 20 minutes into the first one. I'm like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Let's just look at the top 15 on IMDb there. Oh yeah, all three. Sorry, Steve. Anyway, terrible take.
You got me right in the Branagh there.
You need some sort of special biscuit enhancement to watch those movies. Put it that way.
What are you guys then? Fall asleep to movies. I guess really just that bore you?
The last movie I fell asleep to was what was that movie series with Matt Damon?
Bourne Identities?
Yeah, the Bourne, but it was the one with the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, I don't watch many movies anymore.
I don't really fall asleep. I walk out of movies like the Charlie's Angels movies and that sort of shit, but I don't really fall asleep to movies.
The last movie I fell asleep to was Volcano. Remember Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones, where a volcano for no reason erupts in LA?
Hey, the La Brea tar pits, they're a volcano, man. Didn't you know?
Not a movie, but bloody NBA. Like, I love NBA, but it always puts me to sleep if I try and watch it. I think it's the back and forth on the screen. Just gets me every time. All right, Dan, thoughts on Menegola, Parfitt, and Connor Blakely as players who had disappointing seasons in 2019 but could have big 2020 seasons? Could be bargain picks later in the draft or players to pick up in a keeper league for unders, he says. What do you guys think on those three players? Menegola, Parfitt, and Connor Blakely.
How long can we keep talking about Blakely as a pick? I mean, I suppose...
This is the last year. Yeah, and that's why.
This is it. Yeah. New coach, that's it. If he doesn't get it this time, then he's never going to get it. Parfitt, look, he's young, developing. We'll get opportunity. And Menegola... with Jack Stephen and that in the, coming into that team, it's wait and see.
Okay, Tom, how good is it to have cricket back? Jeez. Thoughts on these Gold Coast first draft picks? Hearing there is a gun midfielder they'll pick up, where should we look to draft him given the lack of competition and Sam Walsh's big first year? Is it reasonable to expect similar results? He's talking about Matt Rowe, the expected number one pick to the Gold Coast, puts up huge junior numbers, and he's thinking, is it a similar opportunity that we saw Sam Walsh put up nearly a ton in his rookie year, and is it worth giving Rowell a chance given how rancid Gold Coast has been in the past couple of years in the midfield?
Well,
I mean, you know, that was such a massive outlier. Like, no one has ever done what Sam Walsh did last year. So it's sort of the fact that there's been no history of it and it's come out of nowhere. I find it really hard to believe that someone can match it.
And it's funny, they go, this player averages 140 in TAC Cup and then gets to AFL and it's 60. So the expectation of what they can produce to what they produce, you know, there's boys against men's, positional, what they're going to play and role and that, all that sort of stuff as well.
If we look at what was surrounding Sam Walsh, there was a lot of veteran players, and you look at the Gold Coast, and they're going to be rolling out, I would expect, a substantially younger list. What do you get when you're younger and less experienced? You get more inconsistencies. So I find it really hard to believe that he's going to tear it up. Like you mentioned, Cam, it's a big outlier. If he scored 80, I mean, maybe he is that good. Maybe he is that amazing, and he'll demand that attention. So if you want to take a late flyer on him, by all means.
I'd like to highlight a passage here written by the draft gurus at AFL.com about Rowell, and this might put you off him, Steve, here. Rowell idolises Geelong champion Joel Selwood and has won plaudits for playing in a similarly uncompromising manner.
So he's a ducker.
Well, the thing, unlike Joel Selwood, like, he'll go into Gold Coast and be, what, their best midfielder, so... The only time we've ever seen Joel Selwood be Geelong's best midfielder, you'd want to forget that year. He must have missed that one.
I'll tell you what, like, so Steve just keeps on dangling this Joel Selwood hate in front of me, and I'm trying so hard not to bite. I'm not going to bite. Not today.
Hey, Mr. guys, Fizz. How good is it to have cricket back? We didn't answer that part of the question as well.
So good. I just spent the whole day on the couch watching the cricket today. So good.
Ugh. Steve Smith going to be the highest scorer of the summer, gets out for four. That was lovely.
It's Marcus Loosechange, or whatever his name is.
Josh Hutchinson asks, Paul Ahern went to halfback for a little bit late in the season. A, gut feel if he gets defender status or not, and B, is he relevant as a mid only? Pardon me. Knowing there might be a chance of gaining defender status later on.
Well, that defensive was only a sample size, wasn't it? It was, what, maybe 3 or 4 games from memory? So, small possibility, depending on how the fantasy gods look upon it.
Yeah, I'm also just, if he doesn't get it, I'm really not big on drafting hoping for a dual position switch.
Mm.
It's a potential, you know, spot on your bench that just doesn't need to be taken up.
It's like those people who thought Brent Stanton a couple of years ago was going to get that.
Yeah, Brent Stanton was the one.
Status and never got it.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, look, I don't think he's relevant as a mid-only. I don't think he'll get defender. I am a little bit different to these boys. I think because we actually saw him play in that role at the end of the year, if I was in Ultimate Footy where they have the early position change, I would be more interested in buying because I think he can push to a D2 average. In your AFL Fantasy, if you're playing that, it's round six, so I would be a little bit more cautious and I'd want deep benches. In Supercoach, obviously, you don't get them, so, you know.
All right, well, that's all the questions we've got and that's all the time we have for this episode. Catch us on Twitter at The Draft Doctors if you haven't already. Chuck a rating on iTunes if you haven't done that as well. And we will see you next week as we go all year round.
Thanks for listening to The Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.